hope you're taking advantage of the current property boom. I haven't seen conditions like this since the early 1970s when I first started investing. Now, you won't find charts about that particular boom in the various research house statistics because they weren't really keeping those type of records back then. Back then, the boom in property values was in part related to the very strong inflation we were experiencing, and at that time I had to pay more than 10% as my mortgage interest rate. However, the booming markets of the early 70s and that of the late 80s and the boom of the early 2000s, 20 years ago, created a lot of real estate empires. I know the boom of the 70s got me off to a great start, and the subsequent booms grew the value of my portfolio, allowing me to continually expand it. But I also know there were others who invested in the various property booms in the property market during those times who haven't had the success they were hoping for. Initially, as the booming markets were moving on, they thought they were heading in the right direction. But you know what Warren Buffett said, a rising tide lifts all ships, and that's why most people involved in property at the moment are feeling really good at present in the current property boom. But he also said that when the tide goes out, you're going to see who's swimming naked. So whether you're already invested in the property market, whether you're planning to take advantage of this particular cycle that we're in, you must make sure that you aren't one of those casualties left naked when the tide goes out. And it eventually will. So my chat with you today will help you understand the type of property that you should be buying at this stage of the cycle, not only to take advantage of the current conditions, but one that's going to see you through for the rest of your life. Today's podcast is in two parts. Initially, I'm going to give you my thoughts, and then I'm going to have a chat with independent financial advisor Stuart Weems, who's going to give you his thoughts on a big mistake he's seeing investors make at the moment, in the hope that you won't make the same mistake. By the end of today's show, you should have more clarity and some new ideas to help you become a successful property investor. So, welcome to today's show.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialize in helping you grow, protect, and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
Australia's property markets have been booming all year, yet it's never been more important to make sure you're making the right investment decisions. Maybe that's why I'm continuously being asked questions by the media. Things like, well, what's the right property for this stage of the property cycle? Or is this the right time? Or maybe it's the wrong time to invest in property. They're asking questions like, is it too late to invest this time around? Prices have grown so much. And others are asking, where's the best place to invest in 2021? There's some of the things I want to chat with you about now, because while a rising tide will lift all ships, investing in the current market may not be as straightforward as you think. In fact, I'm currently seeing a lot of home buyers and investors making some very poor choices. And as the saying goes, only when the rising tide goes out, you're going to discover who's swimming naked. In other words, while there's little doubt most markets, most suburbs, many properties are going to excel over the next couple of years, what about when this property cycle comes to an end? Will you be one of those people who are caught out? Or are you going to be one of those investors who's thought ahead to what type of properties would carry you through not only the peaks, but also the troughs to reach the calm waters on the other side? Okay, well, first let's just have a look at what's happening in our property markets, what's been driving this property boom. And simply, it's been a conglomeration of a whole lot of things. Some people would call it a perfect storm of factors that are driving prices up at a faster rate than we've seen for almost two decades. Buyers are out in droves, keen to get into our rising housing markets. Banks are welcoming a raft of new customers through their doors. And sellers are being swamped with offers. And there's a couple of reasons, as I said. First of all, the low interest rates. That's facilitating a change from all types of prospective property buyers. Many are already starting to experience FOMO, you know, fear of missing out, and they're pushing property prices higher and higher. We've discussed that on previous podcasts. You can go back and listen to the sort of mistakes you shouldn't be making. You shouldn't be making FOMO mistakes. But the other thing that's driving property prices is Australians are upgrading their living situations. And this is creating huge demand, whether it's established homeowners moving to better, bigger accommodation, other homeowners upgrading their lifestyles to a better neighbourhood, the 20-minute neighbourhood, or to near regional locations, further enough away from the city to miss some of the COVID-related issues, but close enough to transport in every now and then for work. Maybe it's baby boomers moving to more friendly townhouses or family-friendly apartments, or even tenants upgrading to become new owner-occupiers. This low interest rate environment has created a surge in demand. At the same time as the year keeps moving on, we're getting rising consumer confidence. There's a combination of improving economic conditions, increased job security, plus the sense that we're getting this COVID thing under control. And this is lifting consumer confidence, which in turn creates strong demand for housing. When people feel comfortable about their jobs, secure about their futures, they're prepared to make big investment decisions. And we know that increased demand leads in turn, in time, to higher prices. There's also the supply and demand inequality at the moment. Buyers are snapping up properties faster than vendors can list them for sale at present. And that, of course, that puts further pressure on prices. This fast rate of absorption is keeping the supply of houses extremely low. There's more houses being bought at any one time than new properties coming onto the market, which means that the advertised properties for sale is well below the five-year average. At the same time, there's pent-up demand. And it's not just the general supply and demand equation that I'm talking about that's causing this property boom. Buyers are particularly strong at the moment because there's pent-up demand after a number of years of people sitting by the sidelines. Last year in 2020, COVID held back many buyers. They sat on the sidelines just waiting to see what would transpire. The year before that, in 2019, there was an upcoming federal election, and this scared off many buyers. Remember, there were all the concerns about what may happen to taxes, what may happen if there's a change of government. And the year before that, in 2018, there was the Haynes Royal Commission, and there were worries about finance. This distracted home buyers and investors. This means there are plenty of buyers who've been sitting on the fence waiting for a reason to enter the market or to take a plunge and upgrade their current home. And currently, with the media full of hype, has given them the excuse they're waiting for. At the same time, the surge in property values is creating FOMO, as I mentioned, fear of missing out, and that's driving people to all move at once. And then there's the demographic changes, which we discuss regularly in this podcast, often with Simon Kirstenmacher. The changes in demographic, the way we're wanting to live, and the way the sort of homes we're wanting to live in since the pandemic has made a difference as well. Firstly, there's the desire to live in a 20-minute neighbourhood. I've explained that before. This means that the days where our home was simply a place to rest our head and enjoy some downtime between work and our social lives has gone. The coronavirus social distancing put an end to that sort of life, hasn't it? If social distancing and COVID-19 taught us anything, it showed us the importance of the neighbourhood in which we live. If we can leave our home and be in a 20-minute walking or short trip or riding distance of a great shopping strip, our favourite coffee shops, amenities, the beach, a great park, all that makes a difference and makes life more palatable there. So people are looking to live in those suburbs, and smart investors are investing in those suburbs as well. This trend's reshaping Australia's property markets as we knew it, driving price increases in areas that are in strong demand. So that's what's happening now. But fast forward 2, 3, 4, 5 years, what can we expect? I think if we fast forward 3 years, we're going to find that property values have risen significantly. It's likely that this cycle, property values will rise 25-30% over the cycle from where they began in this property cycle. And by then, our economy will have rebounded even further. Wages will have increased. Inflation will start to rise. And of course, this means that the Reserve Bank's most likely going to have stepped in. Remember, we're 3, 4, 5 years down the future, and the Reserve Bank will have raised interest rates, but only a little. I don't think they're going to raise them a lot, just enough to start to slow things down a bit. Now, Of course, wages will have gone up and the Reserve Bank will be thrilled if we get 3-4% per annum wages growth, but it's unlikely we're going to have growth of wages as strong as that. Most Australians' take-home salary is going to be less than that. Actually, it's been a long time since we've seen that level of wages growth. However, over the same period, property values will have increased at double-digit rates of growth each year. This is going to mean that properties are going to be more unaffordable, or even more unaffordable for many Australians. At the same time, I can see the gap between the rich and the average Australian is only going to keep widening, as people with skill level 1 and 2 jobs, you know, those higher income earners, they're going to experience much larger wage increases. And generally, those people will have multiple streams of income. They'll have investments, they'll have shares, they'll have money coming in from a number of sources. Hey, they may be even investing in Bitcoin. I'm not saying, well, actually, that's not really an investment, is it? They may be speculating in Bitcoin. But what I'm getting at is, for some people, affordability is not going to be as big an issue. In other words, moving forwards, properties are going to become more affordable to some, in fact to most people, but they're still going to remain affordable to wealthier Australians who are going to be able to and be prepared to pay a premium to live in the best locations. But the good news is there's something you can do about that now to ensure you make the best investment decisions for the future and that you end up owning the right types of property once this cycle is over. You see, I think moving forward, we're going to have a two-tier property market. This means, on the one hand, there's going to be more affluent people who are going to be able to afford to live in the more expensive discretionary suburbs and in those what I call established money suburbs and in the up-and-coming gentrifying aspirational suburbs. On the other hand, we're going to have the majority of Australians who are going to find, at the end of this cycle, properties are just going to be too unaffordable because they've only experienced slow or stagnant minimal wages growth. This means moving forward, we're likely to find a larger percentage of Australians are going to be unable to enter the property market as owner-occupiers. And those who can are going to be flung further and further out from the centre of our capital cities because that's where the wealthy people are going to want to live. The wealthy people don't like to commute. Now, of course, this is a social issue. It may lead to social unrest, but that's something we have got no control over and not something I want to address in this particular podcast. But what I want to explain to you is it's going to be important to own the right type of property. The key takeaway I'm trying to get to you is that you should ensure that you own the right type of property when this cycle comes to an end, but that means you're going to have to make the right investment decisions today. Unfortunately, I'm finding many investors are currently making poor investment decisions, sometimes because they don't know any better, and often because they're taking shortcuts because of fear of missing out, as I mentioned earlier. That could, though, leave them burned further down the track. You see, buying the wrong property now not only affects your investment purchase today, but it'll affect your capacity to create wealth over the next 5, 10, 15 years. Your future financial freedom is going to depend upon the quality of the assets you own. And you can't expect above average returns from a secondary property. This isn't only important when this property cycle finishes. What I'm trying to say is that it's going to be critical to own the right investment properties over the long term when you eventually retire. I don't know when that's going to be, 10, 15, 20 years' time, but you're going to want the income from your properties to pay for what I call the longest holiday of your life, your retirement. And for many of our clients at Metropole, they're actually wanting to pass their wealth on to future generations. So you're going to want to own the right sort of properties that are going to be in strong demand to support your future generations' wealth as well. So, with that said, where should you invest? Well, in my mind, it's going to be important to invest in the type of locations where not only more affluent owner-occupiers live, but where more affluent tenants are going to want to live because they're going to be able to afford to pay increasing rent over time. Remember, there are two types of tenants, those who rent because they can't afford to buy a home, and the more affluent tenants who rent for lifestyle reasons. So I would suggest investing in, I guess, two types of suburb. First of all, what I call the established money suburbs. This is where owner-occupiers have been living for a long time, 20, 30, 40 years, and they've got old debt. In fact, most of them have got minimal debt It's been shown that 50% of owner-occupiers in Australia have no debt at all. If you think about it, these suburbs aren't as volatile. They don't go up and down in value as much when we run through economic issues. These suburbs are the opposite of the new money suburbs, where many first home buyers typically have got very little equity in their home, and they're often only 1 or 2 weeks away from broke. So one group of suburbs I'd recommend you invest in is the established money suburbs. But you may say, hey, Michael, that's too expensive for me. So what about investing in the aspirational suburbs? This is where higher income earning millennials are moving to. They're bringing in new money and they're in turn upgrading, improving, gentrifying these locations. In general, there'll be the next ripple of suburbs out from the established money suburbs. They're often the middle ring suburbs of our capital cities. These are going to also be the type of suburbs where the more affluent tenants I was talking about a moment ago want to live. But I would avoid investing in the outer, cheaper, less affluent suburbs, which are unlikely to gentrify in the medium term, even in the long term, because that's not where the wealthy people who come in and upgrade suburbs want to live. That's not where they want to move to. This means homeowners in these areas will never develop the type of wealth that those who own properties in the inner and middle ring suburbs of our capital cities will. Similarly, investors who buy in those areas, they're going to miss out on the strong capital growth that they could have experienced by buying in investment-grade locations. Now, it's all very well knowing where to invest, but that's only half the challenge. If you want to take advantage of this current property market, you've also got to own the right type of property in those right locations. This means if you buy a cheap property, rather than the type of property that's going to be in continuous strong demand by those higher wage earning skill level 1 and skill level 2 workers, you're less likely to get strong capital growth. So in general, I think you should be owning townhouses and larger family-friendly apartments rather than cheap apartments in high-rise towers or Legoland look-alike houses in the outer suburbs or even properties in our regional cities. The problem is during this current property boom, almost all properties are rising. They're increasing in value, and that's disguising the bad investment decisions. Remember what I said at the beginning, the rising tide's lifting all ships. So this means at the moment people who bought the wrong type of properties still think they're doing well. But their bubble's eventually going to burst when they realise their mistakes, I don't know, 5, 10 years down the track. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not suggesting there's a property bubble that's going to burst. What I'm saying is that those who invest in secondary properties, they're eventually going to realise they've made a huge mistake. They're going to realise the opportunity cost they've lost in not getting the capital growth. So you know by now my strategy is to invest in capital growth, for capital growth first, rather than cash flow. That's the only way you're ever going to build a substantial asset base. Now, why do you need cash flow to stay in the game? It's really only capital growth that's going to get you out of the rat race. Now, sure, buying cheap properties in lower capital growth areas, less expensive suburbs or in regional Australia, that's going to deliver you more cash flow to start with. But these so-called cheap properties are going to be more expensive in the long run because they won't allow you to achieve your financial goals. They won't allow you to build a substantial enough asset base. They won't replace your income with the type of cash flow that you get from better properties. The cheap properties are going to make it harder to get rental increases. So I'm suggesting that if you're thinking of investing at the moment, you should be thinking of your future. If you don't have a strategic plan around your investing, your chances of building a substantial property portfolio are going to be much lower. That's why when we see clients at Metropole, the first thing we do is we build them a strategic plan. We bring their future into the present to help them understand what's likely, what's possible, what's realistic, or what they should do to be able to achieve what they want to achieve. Yet I found most investors only think of the next couple of years, even 5 or 10 years, rather than what type of property they should own when they eventually retire in, I don't know, 15, 20 years' time or so. But think again, do you really want to own an old property when you retire? I'm seeing people buy old rundown properties now. They can renovate them a bit, but they're 70 or 100 years old now, so they're going to be, I don't know, 120 years old and out of date when they retire. Is this the type of property that's going to allow you to live off the income for another 30 years or so of your own retirement? And is this the type of property you want to pass on to your children and your grandchildren? My guess is not. But if you invest wisely now, you'll thank yourself in the future for doing it. In my mind, the best way to achieve financial freedom is to start with a strategic plan. Because contrary to what most people think, attaining wealth and real financial freedom through property doesn't happen. As I said, some people are currently being fooled by this rising tide. But the statistics show that less than 1% of all those people who get into property own six or more properties. In fact, the latest tax office statistics show there's only 20,434 people in Australia who own six or more properties. Now, you may not want six, but remember that 92% of investors never get past their second property. So again, start with the end in mind, because in my mind, a strategic plan will help you achieve your financial freedom because it's going to give you that long-term focus. It's going to help you define your financial goals. It's going to help you see, are they realistic, especially for your timelines? It's going to help measure your progress towards your goals. Is your current property portfolio working for you, or are you working for it? It's going to help you find ways of maximizing your wealth through property and may identify risks you hadn't even thought of. And the real benefit is you're going to be able to grow your wealth through your property portfolio faster and safer than the average investor. And that's what my team at Metropole specialize in. We'd love to help you formulate a strategic plan. We help beginning investors and established investors as well. So I believe you should be doing it with expert help. Why not have a look at metropole.com.au? And whether you're a beginner or experienced investor, if you're looking for a time-tested investment strategy that's going to allow you to own the sort of property that will be the right property in your future self is going to thank you if you sit down with our team today. Go to metropole.com.au, start with a plan, and then, of course, you can use our financial planning, our wealth advisory, buyer's agency, property management, renovations or development services, but it all starts by planning to become the person you plan to become. Now that you've heard my thoughts on what type of investment to buy at this stage of the cycle, the type of investment that'll outperform not just in the short term but in the long term, I recently read a blog from Stuart Weems, an independent financial advisor and prolific author, who's also explained the type of property you should avoid. Regular listeners to this podcast need no introductions to Stuart, and they'd know I've got a similar view, or we've got similar views about what makes a great investment property. So I'm interested in your thoughts. Welcome, Stuart.
Hey, Michael. Great to be with you again.
Now, Stuart, you recently wrote about why investing in the outer suburbs is likely to lead to underperformance. What was your motivation behind that great article?
Well, I kept noticing posts of different buyer's agents, and this is more recently, but I think it's something that's not just crept up. It's been present really over the last sort of 20 years that I've been in business. You see posts from buyer's agents saying, look, I just bought this great property for my client. It was $500,000. It's going to generate nearly 5% in income in terms of a gross rental yield. You know, it's on 1,000 square meters, a really big block of land that we could subdivide down the track. And you look at it on the face of it and you go, well, I can see how an uneducated investor would be interested to something like that. That would make more sense compared to say, oh, it's going to cost me $1.5 million to buy a house in a capital city and I'll get 2% rental yield and I can't subdivide it because the land's only 200 square meters, et cetera. So when you compare those two propositions, I can see how people kind of, I'm going to use the word get sucked into thinking that's a good investment strategy. And I thought, well, let's have a look. And I picked one of these posts because it didn't have the address of the property or even the suburb. It just had an image of the property, but it had the purchase price, the land size, and that's all. And so a little bit of research online using RP data, I was able to find the property and use it as a bit of a case study.
And it happened to be in Toowoomba, which has only got a population of 120,000 people. That's a very small city, isn't it?
And the post said that the property was North Brisbane. So that's not really, that's kind of west of Brisbane, certainly not north, and well out of Brisbane. You wouldn't even label it Brisbane. But that's what attracted me to the post. I thought, well, let's choose a property in Brisbane, a Brisbane outer suburb, for example. And then I, you know, with that bit of research, first, that was the bang, kind of the first highlight. Hang on, it's the post isn't really that accurate. Clearly, what we're trying to do is sell something here.
Sure. Well, I think it all starts with having an investment strategy, and it depends if your strategy is capital growth or cash flow. We both believe that capital growth gets you out of the real estate game, out of the rat race, but there's no doubt that you need your cash flow to stay in the game through the ups and downs of the cycle. But if you don't get the capital growth, or if you can only buy two or three investment properties in your life, you really need to get ones that grow at wealth-producing rates of return. And the outer suburbs are just not going to do that over the long term, are they?
And chasing income is never going to make you rich either. Chasing income from property is never going to make you rich, because interest rates change and that eats into your income. So unless you can, you've got a considerable cash flow to repay debt, assuming you don't have that considerable cash flow, then you're going to be sensitive on interest rates. And then property requires, not only has expenses every year, but requires maintenance. And it's fair enough, you want to spend the money on the property, but so long as you're getting that money back in terms of the underlying land values appreciating. So chasing income is not just wrong in my opinion, but I think it's wrong mathematically. Like, it's just basic maths. It's not going to work. You don't need to trust Michael or Stuart in regards to that. You just need to trust the numbers. The big thing is really land supply, Michael. So this property was on 1,000 square meters on a corner block. Sure, you could subdivide it. It's fantastic, but it's 17 Ks out of Toowoomba. So it's not even really in Toowoomba. It's on the outskirts. And literally, there are millions of acres of land surrounding it, vacant land. So if demand increases in Toowoomba, what's going to happen? Well, the city just spreads. You know, they'll just more land releases, more subdivisions, and there's more land available. So subdividing a block might be great from an income perspective because you can put two dwellings on it. Well, you'd have to demolish that dwelling firstly, and so you've got to deal with the construction costs. But from an income perspective, you might be able to put two dwellings on it. But now you've got two lots of maintenance, your two lots of expenses, and again, the income would improve, but how many of those properties do you need to be able to produce enough income to retire on?
Well, you can't expect to get outperformance with secondary properties or cheap properties. And you're right, you actually want the sort of property where income is going to grow over time, that's going to support your lifestyle in the future. And in those areas, the demographics isn't right for continuing strong wages growth that's going to then be able to afford strong rental growth. Of course, the other factor is that the land to asset ratio tends to be the wrong way around there. The land isn't as valuable. So even if you've got more of it, it's not how much big the land is, it's really how valuable the land is. And if there's no scarcity and no strong demand by people with high and rising incomes, it's hard to see it going up in value as much.
And it's represented in the evidence. So when I had a look at the past growth of this property, it was first sold because it was only 14 years old, the dwelling. It was just some vacant land and they built a dwelling on it 14 years ago. And about 6 or 7 years ago, it sold. And so really between that sales date and today, or in fact, last year it sold, the growth rate was only 2.5%. I mean, if I'm going to come to you and say, oh, look, Michael, here's a property, you can buy it, its historic growth is 2.5%, what are you going to say? You're going to say, go away, Stuart. I mean, you're crazy. So, you know, you can't bet against the evidence. And if you do, you want to have really strong evidence of why history won't repeat itself. What is changing in that area so dramatically that everything's going to turn around and there's going to be a shortage of land supply and excess amount of demand?
Well, at the moment, properties all around Australia are increasing in value, and that's lulling people into a false sense of security. But as this cycle slows down, it's going to be, again, a tale of two cities. Currently, higher-end properties, more expensive properties are growing in value faster. Sure, at the beginning of this cycle, at the beginning of this year, the lower end of the market started to pick up first. But now, as affordability constraints are slowing things down just a little bit, and it's likely to continue as the cycle moves on, I can see the outer areas having weakness and affordability constraints more so than the inner suburbs of our capital cities.
Yeah, in a rising tide, all ships rise. And so if we have a look, I think probably to my mind, the biggest contributor to past growth over the last 30 years or so, because sometimes you can go, oh, well, look at this outer area, this suburb has actually done pretty well, you know, in terms of capital growth, not as good as investment grade locations, but relatively well. Well, the thing we have to acknowledge that's occurred over the last 30 years is massive changes in borrowing capacity. So the same couple 30 years ago probably could borrow two or three times less than what they can today. So borrowing capacity has significantly increased. So if it increases my purchasing power, I can then pay more, not because I've got more income, but because I've got more borrowing power. Whereas I think from here, borrowing capacity is peaked. I can't see borrowing capacity rising anymore. So only way you're going to get more borrowing capacity if you're a low middle income earner is by generating more income. But if your income isn't rising, so if there's not a lot of wage inflation, your borrowing capacity is going to be static, which is the same for everyone that's going to live in your area or surrounding your area. And so if I don't have capacity to pay more, I'm going to be constrained, and that's going to constrain borrowing capacity. So therefore, what you want to do is invest in those areas where that's not the case.
In other words, where people have got higher wages, skill level one and two workers, as the ABS tend to label them, people with multiple sources of income. But it's not only the owner-occupiers who are buying in those sort of areas, or the young millennials who are moving in who are going to gentrify those inner and middle ring suburbs. It also has to do with your tenant profile. Now, again, this is not a judge of people, but if your long-term income source that's going to pay for the longest holiday of your life, your retirement, is going to be dependent upon your tenants who can go out to work, earn more money and pay you higher rent, the sort of tenants who want to live in your properties are going to be important as well. And I found there are two groups of tenants. Not everyone rents because they can't afford to buy. So people are renting in certain locations for lifestyle, but there is a large percentage of Australians who are only a week or two away from broke. And let's be blunt, they're tending to be in those lower income earners, tend to be in the outer suburbs. And that's not really the sort of person you want to be dependent upon for your future income.
No, that's right. You've got to think about tenant profile. Exactly right. And when you hear about horror stories about, had these bad tenants and they ruined the property and tenant turnover and bad property management, et cetera, you know, when you hear horror stories about property investing and at the end of the story, they conclude property investing doesn't work. Well, you've got to make sure you're buying, you're attracting a good tenant profile in your asset. You know, if you've got a professional couple, for example, they've probably got almost zero chance of unemployment. If it's in a blue chip suburb, they're probably out either at work or out to restaurants or whatever. They probably spend very little time in your property. They probably don't have pets. They probably don't have kids, all these sorts of things. So there's less wear and tear and the chance of rental default is very low. Whereas you move further out, you're going to attract younger families, typically lower income, middle earners. You're right that the chance of tenant default is much higher and the wear and tear on your property is also much higher, which means that you will have to spend more money on maintenance and repairs and improvements down the track.
So the more investment-grade suburbs, the more established money suburbs, where a lot of the people in those areas have owned their home 20, 30, 40 years, have minimal mortgage, no mortgage at all in many cases, they're less volatile price-wise and they exhibit less risk, don't they?
That's right. And we tell ourselves, really interesting, Michael, we haven't discussed this off air, but there was an article by someone that's very data-driven that said that there's no relationship between income and capital growth because the data didn't show a relationship between income and capital growth, which is interesting. And I think this is something we've spoken about before, that property is part art, part science. If you get too drawn into all the numbers, you'll end up making a mistake, that the numbers don't always tell a full story. And I would argue maybe the data is wrong. Not the data is wrong per se, but the collection of that data is not representative of what's really going on, right? But so if we have a look at the richest 20% of Australians, they own about 64% of all household wealth. And between 03 and 17, that 20% grew their wealth by 68% compared to the lower 20% that only grew their wealth by 6% over that period of time. So it's not just income, it's overall wealth, because you can have people that, for example, those clients that I just mentioned, when you look at their income on a census data, their income, their employment income is going to be zero, but they've obviously got a significant asset base and they've got significant investment income. And I think that's where the data is going wrong in terms of what is income. Is it business income? Is it investment income? Is it PAYG income? But really what you want is you want to invest in a location that attracts that top 20%. Because their wealth is going to grow, outgrow just the median wealth. It's going to grow perpetually. And that divide between the rich and poor, unfortunately, we can talk about it from a social perspective. It's not a great outcome, of course. But the reality is it's a snowball rolling down a hill and no one's going to be able to stop it. You know, that divide between rich and poor just gets larger and larger and larger, that gap. And really, if we worry about it, we sit back and go, well, who can afford a property for $1.5 million? And in 20 years' time, if that property is worth $6 million, who can afford that? Well, the answer is that top 20%. They're in the top 20%. They're not outside of that. And that's the localities that you want to be owning assets in, people that want to live in those locations.
So moving forward, the rich are going to get richer. And we know it, that location is going to do the bulk of the heavy lifting. I'll often suggest it could be up to 80% of the capital growth of your property. So getting the right location is critical. But people say, Stuart, the outer suburbs, they're growing. And they are growing population-wise, but that doesn't necessarily mean capital growth. And even though there has been capital growth, the median price often changes because of the nature of the property. But one of the interesting things I found recently driving out to some of Melbourne's outer suburbs was the size of the land, how small the blocks are, and yet the price of those townhouses way out in the middle of nowhere.
So when you look at median growth rates, they represent both a change in land value and a change in improvements value. And I think that's something we need to remind ourselves of, because we look at those median growth rates and we immediately think, oh, the property has changed in value over that time. Well, that's possible, but it's also possible there's been substantial improvements in that location as well. So not only just the construction of the home, which occurs, so someone might buy a house and land package, but once they've done that, they'll do some renovations, some improvements. They might drop a pool in, they'll do some landscaping, you know, that it's not just reflective of that, just that build cost. And that's all going to contribute to increase in the median house price. And so the problem there is you're getting more improvements value rather than the underlying land value changing. Why doesn't the underlying land value change? Well, if you're in an area or if there's vacant land in close proximity to that location and I want to live in that location, why would I pay you more? I'd rather just go and buy a block of vacant land a kilometre down the road and pay a hell of a lot less. So you need that you need to invest in an area where supply is finite. It's finished. There's no more vacant land. It is what it is. Because that way you can't change supply. You know, you can't change supply. You can change supply of apartments to some extent, but you certainly can't change supply of houses, particularly in blue chip locations, because they don't really lend themselves to subdivision. And so then all you've got to worry about is the demand side of the equation in the form of you, well, will demand be higher or lower in 20 years' time? Well, again, if you're in an outer area, who knows? If you're in a sort of blue chip suburb that's had 40 years of strong evidence that it's in high demand, chances are things won't change and there'll be high demand in over the next 30 or 40 years.
So the bottom line is don't compromise on your investment principles. Start with a strategic plan so that you know what you want to achieve, and then find the right sort of properties that are going to help you achieve that over the long term. And in general, that's not going to work in the outer suburbs. Now, this fits in with the principles you've written in your book that's become a classic, Investopoly, where you've got a whole lot of rules on property investment. If people want to find out more about that particular great book or more about your services, Stuart, how do they find out?
Just Google or go to prosolution.com.au or Google Investopoly. That'll take you to the book and the links and the website and my blog and those sorts of things. And I think, Michael, there's a lesson here in that blog that I just wrote, because what I'm mostly concerned about is people getting sucked into a sales pitch around property. And of course, a buyer's agent gets paid when they complete a transaction. And so the more transactions I can entice people into, the more money I earn. Now, that can be misused, of course, and it is misused by some buyer's agents in the market. So I think starting off with a plan is a really good idea, because what it does is it avoids the temptation to get sucked into a sales pitch. it firstly invites you to really focus on the fundamentals. So what are the attributes of the property that are going to get me there, that are going to help me move forward? And then once you've got a very clear idea of what that strategy is, then you can go to the tactic. Then you can go to the finding the property that fits that. So going to a business to get a plan and to get some education and make sure you've got a sound understanding of the fundamentals is absolutely key. Responding to a sales pitch of a property that looks good on the face of it is a recipe for disaster. So just be really careful. I think for people out there, be really careful. I think it's a good sign when, I mean, life always leaves clues and lessons. Maybe one of the lessons is if people are advertising the product rather than the advice, that's a dead giveaway for someone that might be a bit more transactional rather than relationship-based and more interested in providing value.
But clearly, buyer's agent is an important part of the process, but they're just going to implement the plan put together by the strategic property writer who hasn't got a particular bias. Shouldn't matter whether it's Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, shouldn't matter if it's inner or outer suburbs, it's what's going to get you to where you want to get to. So it doesn't start with the product. It doesn't start with the stock list. It doesn't start with some preferred suburbs where you feel comfortable in. It starts with you and where you and your family want to end up.
I think that's probably the difference between a real estate agent and a true buyer's agent or investment property advisor. Both might call themselves the same name, but really at the end of the day, you're either in sales or you're in advice. You're not in both.
Good point. Great way to finish off. Thanks for your time, Stuart.
Thanks, Michael. Cheers.
I hope you got some benefit from my chat with Stuart a moment ago and also my previous discussion about the sort of investment property that you should be looking at to secure your financial future. And if you did, I'd really appreciate it if you told somebody else about the Michael Yardney podcast as well. I'm sure you know somebody who's similarly interested in growing their financial future. Why not join me in Microsite to help as many people as possible become financially independent? Of course, you can tell the world about it by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to this. And if you do, and I read it out, I'd love to gift you one of my books as a way of saying thank you. And recently, Getting Pro left a review on Apple Podcasts saying, I first came across this podcast a month or so ago, and since then I've listened to at least the last 6 months of Michael. Hey, thank you very much, Getting Pro. By the way, you can listen at 1.5 times speed. I think it works just as well. Anyway, he went on to say, giving so much knowledge about investing over a wide range of investing, mostly, and I particularly like his mindset message, it's good to see somebody actually touching on one of the hardest parts of investing. Well, thank you for the kind words. And if you send me an email, michael@metropole.com.au, I'd love to gift you one of my books. Now, I left out my mindset message today because it was a longer podcast with the two sections, but it'll be back again in the next show. And before I come back twice a week for these shows, of course, you can catch me on social media. Just look for Michael Yardney, or why not join my private Facebook group? Go to Facebook and look for the Property Update Facebook group. And there every day I leave a couple of snippets, something I don't leave elsewhere, that'll just give you some further insights into what's happening in our property markets. I'll be back again real soon. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?